evening. Welcome to the Celeri Report. Today is September 1st, 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm on the road from Tennessee to California. I was in Santa Fe last weekend, and now I'm in Las Vegas. I've been here since Sunday night, so occasionally you might hear a boom, 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 or a helicopter fly by. It's the sound of Las Vegas, which runs late and makes a lot of noise. You can tell that Las Vegas has been hit hard by the squeeze on the middle class. How a middle class entertainment center that is this significant is supposed to survive economically with the squeeze on the middle class, it brings to question why the Trumps of this world may be wanting to preserve the middle class. Tomorrow I drive to Reno and then to Davis and then next to Palo Alto. We don't have time to do a lunch in Reno or Davis, but I will keep in mind your suggestions to do so, and I'll look for a chance to maybe do one in Reno next year when I come through. Thank you to a subscriber in Dallas who has indeed inspired us to schedule lunch with Catherine in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, October 9th, 2016. I very much appreciate the help with finding the right restaurants and your enthusiasm, so we look forward to doing that one. I hope to be able to announce a launch party in Tulsa sometime in the next week or two. If it happens, it'll be October 16th, and I'll keep you posted. Because we're coming into a busy fall this year, again, I did a commentary called What's Up This Fall 2016. It's nowhere intense as it was last year. I wrote a really big piece on What's Up This Fall 2015. So the calendar's thinner, but I would encourage you to take a look at that. It's off the homepage, but you can link to it from the links on the left-hand side. Our theme tonight is celebrating labor. On Labor Day, I'll put up one of my favorite poems called On Work by Kay Hilgebron. Let me just read you from that beautiful piece. You work that you may keep pace with the earth and the soul of the earth, for to be idle is to become a stranger unto the seasons, and to step out of life's procession that marches in majesty and proud submission towards the infinite. It's a beautiful poem, and it celebrates this Labor Day, and it'll go up with one of my favorite paintings from Thomas Hart Benton, one of my favorite artists. And I really do want to celebrate work. I'm someone who has always worked hard all my life. I love to work. And I think that work is a way of giving praise and giving blessings, being useful and sort of playing in the flow of all the things that are going on around us. So I want to celebrate you. Most of the people in this Celeri Report are very hard workers and like to work. So I celebrate you, and I just hope this weekend you don't work too hard, but instead take time to really rejoice. I've noticed that for some reason in the last 3 weeks that the idea of a time budget keeps coming up. I've talked with many people about it in the last couple weeks, and I think that's because the pressure on people's time just keeps increasing. I'm working with a really wonderful financial planner who's also a precious metals dealer on ways of reorganizing the Celeri Report content into something a financial planner who's interested in dealing with a real deal could use to help people understand the real risks. And one of the things we were doing recently is looking at the website worldlifeexpectancy.com, which has all the global statistics on world life expectancy and also what people die of. And it reminded me of something I wrote in the 2015 Christmas card. I wanted to read it to you today. There were two scriptures on it. Above all else, guard your heart, for from it flows the wellsprings of life. Proverbs 4:23, and then Ezekiel 36. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. And I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you the heart of you a heart of flesh. Globally, let me keep reading. This is what I wrote underneath the scripture. Globally, the leading cause of death is heart disease, approximately 7.5 million deaths a year. Let's call heart disease what it really is, a broken heart. If you break that down in the United States, 611,000 men and women die annually from a broken heart, 16,000 from homicide and 41,000 from suicide. That is to say that 167 poor people a day die from a broken heart, 112 from suicide, no doubt caused by a broken heart, and 43 from homicide, some or all of which were caused by a broken heart. This means we are spending at least 40 times as much concern on protecting ourselves and our loved ones. This means we should be spending at least 40 times as much concern on protecting ourselves and our loved ones from a broken heart as from a violent crime or act. While I appreciate that it is hard to ignore the latest boogeyman, understand that one of the goals of the people organizing and financing these operations and the subsequent boogeyman shriekometers is to break your heart. Consequently, the best thing you can do for your health and your finances today is to nurture your heart, your hope, and your love. Feed and strengthen your heart and the hearts of those around you. Over Labor Day, please look at your time budget and see if you do not have opportunities to build more time into your schedule between now and the end of the year. Time that feeds and strengthens your heart and the hearts of those around you. Money and markets. U.S. dollar index has been trying to struggle up and fell back again on more bad news today. It's now trading at about 95.65% now, down 3.12% for the year. Fixed income still is a very high performer. The long treasury up 17.5%. The intermediate treasury ETF up 7%. Bond aggregate up 5.5%. Junk bond ETF still holding at 11.54%. I don't have the courage to do that. Equities, the S&P now up almost 8% for the year. The home builders are doing better. They're up 5.71%. Real estate, of course, anything with a yield has done well this year, up 12%. VGK, the European ETF, is now up 0.8% for the year, so it's in the money. Germany ETF up 2.86%. Developed markets minus North America up 2.1%. The large cap China now up 6.5%. Big recovery for China. And the small caps 0.83%. They're in the black. Emerging markets doing well 15.25%. If the Fed raises interest rates, that could get absolutely hammered. So please be careful. Commodities, the overall index up 1% for the year. Gold has been correcting. It's still up 23.49%. Silver also correcting. It's still up 36.01%. The strong performer for the year. Way ahead of treasuries, way ahead of emerging markets. And oil is now back down almost to 14% negative. So expect the markets to be flat between now and Labor Day. Likely not much activity. You see that, and in this world, anything can happen. I think the real test is how the general economy, both domestically and globally, perform in October and November, and we'll tell whether it's been slow because it's summer or it's slow because we're really slowing down. Productivity is the big story. We see Stanley Fischer several times talking about productivity. Stanley Fischer, the vice chairman of the Fed, number two behind Yellen. But clearly, everyone's focused on the fact that productivity growth is falling, and that's not good. In one sense, think of Brexit as a subset of the productivity story. I just finished writing what was arguably one of the hardest things I've ever had to write, the productivity theme for the second quarter wrap-up, and that has taken much greater than I ever anticipated, but it's a very important story and it's a very important piece. It was very important to me that you have a framework to understand the entire productivity issue and relate what the establishment is talking about with what is really going on. In that vein, a great editorial from Martin Wolf that I put up as a commentary on Solari.com, Martin Wolf, top columnist at the Financial Times, talked about the importance of nurturing democracy and addressing inequality, called Can Global Capitalism and Liberal Democracy Survive? And expresses the point that without liberal democracy, you know, you're not going to have a strong economy. And the challenge, and I really hammer this home in the piece, which we'll have in PDF form available next week. So I hope you really take the time to read it. Again, it's very important. The key to improving productivity is to stop destroying it. And we're watching enormous multiple personality disorder in the headlines. So today we saw from the Washington Post, quote, like it's been nuked, quote, millions of bees dead after South Carolina sprays for Zika mosquitoes. And then we see from Fortune, President Obama to urge G20 leaders to boost growth and heed angry citizens. Really, is destroying the bee population heeding angry citizens? You look at the Washington Post headline and you think, what's the problem? Were you not killing them fast enough? And now you really want to destroy anybody's ability to grow any food whatsoever. I mean, you can't imagine, you just can't imagine anybody sitting there with a straight face and talking about productivity when every time you turn around, it seems like the government and the powers that be are trying to destroy productivity. The meantime, we're coming into the G20 meeting, and we're seeing sort of indications of what different countries are hoping to promote at G20. President Obama, as I said, according to Fortune, to urge G20 leaders to boost growth. The Chinese are saying the same thing. They want to focus on growth. They're worried that the U.S. is going to focus on doing those things that leave the U.S. in control but stop growth. U.S. is in a very weak position. We see the president indicating he wants to pass the Trans-Pacific Partnership in a lame duck session after the election. We have Senator Mitch McConnell saying he will not bring it up for a vote. And now the U.S. has to walk into the G20 meeting with a clear indication that it can't get it done. So one of the things that will happen is, given what happened with Brexit, given how Donald Trump is performing in the polls, the G20 summit will clearly deal with rising anti-globalism sentiment. Is going to be important in how you get global growth. In the meantime, in the market, all eyes are on the Fed. In the third week of September, the Fed will meet, and the question is, will they bump interest rates? The market has been feeling sanguine after Stanley Fisher's comments from Jackson Hole. But more data today on manufacturing is leaving the market worried that they probably won't bump. It's too early to tell. We have to see how things look after Labor Day. But if I had to guess, as of today, if nothing changes, that they probably will not bump. Interesting that a Wall Street Journal last week had a headline saying central bank policy is getting weirder. And it's funny because I always use the expression, it just keeps getting weirder. So I'm finding it interesting to see that turn up in the Wall Street Journal. We are doing a great interview with Charles Hugh Smith next week. He's done a marvelous job on his website, Of Two Minds, really documenting the extent to which inflation is eating through American households. And in my experience, households around the world. Interestingly enough, Wall Street Journal just had an article, very persuasive, other than the, you know, if I didn't know the facts, I would be impressed. Saying that the price of food was deflating and it was delivering great benefit to the American household. I talked last week or 2 weeks ago about a commentary I did called Cut and Run or Lockheed Cuts and Runs. It's off the homepage now, but again, you can link from the links on the right left-hand side, or you can pick it up on a search, where I talk about the fact that Lockheed has spun out its information systems and global solutions business into a different company, and that transaction was effected right before the Department of Defense Inspector General announced that last year, going missing with the help of Lockheed Systems, no doubt, was $6.5 trillion at the Department of Defense. So we call that cutting and running, or Lockheed Cuts and Runs. In the same category of cuts and runs, we see AIG selling their mortgage guarantee business. That's more shifting of liabilities, my guess, which could happen when people really start looking hard at the federal budget. Very bad sign. The Norway Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, and certainly the most prestigious sovereign wealth fund in the world, has now had two quarters of outflows as the government has had to draw on those reserves for, instead of putting money in, they're pulling money out. One of the things they're struggling with, of course, is as the high-yielding securities roll over, they're in the process of having to reinvest into lower-yielding securities. And we're going to see that squeeze happening all over the world. I had to raise a big question mark, and you know me, I have a suspicious mind. A headline at the same time that the debate about the sovereign wealth fund was growing, there was a headline August 29th, slaughtered by lightning, bodies of 323 reindeer litter the countryside after being struck by massive lightning bolts in Norway. You look at that and you wonder, I wonder if that was a warning to Norway that the capital markets don't want that flow of capital from the sovereign wealth fund to reverse. You know, if that is the case, then, you know, this is a struggle that's going to go on globally as outflows start to happen from all of these various reserves designed to finance particularly people's retirements or government deficits. And as this commodity super cycle ends, and of course the commodities were what have financed a lot of the sovereign wealth funds, we're gonna see some real tensions over whose capital it really is. I will say this, there's signs of covert warfare everywhere. If you look at the amount of hurricanes, volcano eruptions, fires, and explosions and accidents going on, you really have to wonder, is this Mother Nature or an accident, or is something else going on here? One place where it looks like something really is going on is we see a SpaceX explosion. SpaceX was going to launch a satellite made by the Israelis for Facebook. It was going to be one of the internet providers over Africa, and it makes you wonder, you know, yes, it could be an accident, but it certainly looked like the Midianite thing was happening. And given all his problems with Tesla and SolarCity, no doubt Elon Musk is having a bad week. Another person having a bad week is Dilma Rousseff, the president of Brazil, who has now been impeached by the Brazilian Senate. It's a reminder that you don't want to let interest rates rise in the middle of a commodities recession. It put Brazil in a real squeeze, and then you also irritated different factions in the U.S. and some of the Wall Street or the big investors, and so it combines. The U.S. election, speaking of the Midianite thing happening, we see pronouncements that the Homeland Securities is eyeing whether or not it should take charge of the elections in the face of two election boards reportedly being hacked. I don't know how you do that under the Constitution, but even the hint that Homeland Security might try and do that means the Midianite thing is going really hot and heavy. And some of the people who rig elections are questioning whether they can get it done without going to an extreme. The president of Mexico invited both candidates, Republican and Democrat, to Mexico. Trump said yes. And after you watched his speech after the his meeting with the president of Mexico, it looks like he's getting quite an education. Meantime, Clinton has been buried by more bad email karma. We have another round of emails found, more coming, Julian Assange threatening even more and juicier stuff. I must admit it was the Clintons targeting me that caused me to spend over $1 million of my personal fortune on email warfare, which was really make work, plus hundreds of hours of my time. So the fact that that this is now being done to Clinton, who was, if she did it to me, I can't imagine she didn't do it to a lot of other people. So it's just, you know, you have to be careful. What goes around comes around. So the email karma is slapping back around. We have a wonderful group of heroes this week. You know, some weeks I come into this Leary Report and I feel like there's not someone worthy of being a hero, but this week we have quite a bountiful bunch. First of all, wonderful Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez died unexpectedly and inexplicably last year in one of what many of us believe are suspicious doctor deaths. His wonderful wife, who's managed to create a foundation in his name, the Gonzalez Foundation, and has managed to get out one of his books that he was working on in his death, Conquering Cancer, Volume 1, and I put a commentary up. You can pre-order, and I've ordered my copy. As soon as I get it, I will put up a review. Wonderful, marvelous, true hero, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. Another remarkable hero and heroine, Nico LaHood and his wife, Davida. LaHood is the Brexer County, that's San Antonio, criminal district attorney. And he and his wife did a little video. It's up on the website with the Vaxxed team, saying that he thinks vaccines caused his son's autism. And it's a remarkable, remarkable interview. He's a very courageous man. And finally, University of Chicago Dean of Students, John Ellison, who's written a letter to incoming freshmen. Let me just read some of it to you. It's very heartening. It says, once you're here, you will discover that one of the University of Chicago's defining characteristics is our commitment to freedom of inquiry and expression. This is captured in the university's faculty report on freedom of expression. Members of our community are encouraged to speak, write, listen, challenge, and learn without fear of censorship. Civility and mutual respect are vital to all of us, and freedom of expression does not mean the freedom to harass or threaten others. You will find that we expect members of our community to be engaged in rigorous debate, discussion, and even disagreement. At times, this may challenge you or even cause discomfort. Our commitment to academic freedom means that we do not support so-called trigger warnings. We do not cancel invited speakers because their topics might prove controversial. And we do not condone the creation of intellectual safe spaces where individuals can retreat from ideas and perspectives at odds with their own. What he basically says is, if you don't want free speech, don't come here. Very good. Bravo, John Ellison. Okay, Ask Catherine. We have a tremendous number of questions tonight, so I'm gonna go quickly. But if you feel like skipping ahead to our discussion of the movie, go ahead, because we have quite a lot. First of all, thank you for the great links. We've gotten a lot of great links this week. You all know you have a real eye for a great story. So let me just jump in. Hi, Catherine. We're looking for true money in markets and hope you can explain a bit about this latest executive order means. The White House issued an executive order stipulating what the line of succession was at the Department of Treasury. I'm assuming in case of deaths or accidents. I really don't make a lot out of that. I think it makes sense if you're concerned about the volatility in the environment that you be prepared and have those kinds of successions clear. So if anything does go wrong, everybody's clear who's next in line. So I don't know of any reason why I think that's anything other than prudent planning. Good afternoon. My wife and I are about to close on our mortgage for our new house with our local credit union, which will keep the mortgage in their portfolio, not sell it onto the feds. Oh, good. Our sense is that that might give us some leverage if push comes to shove and the banks collapse, etc. I think you're much better off with the mortgage being owned by people you know. And as long as your local credit union is solvent, there shouldn't be any problem. My question is this: if the Basel III accords are pushed out and bank deposits are converted to shares in the banks, lower class shares, of course, would a credit union already owned by its members be less at risk of getting such a haircut? That kind of haircut is going to happen when you have a too big to fail situation that is now going to go through, in essence, a failure. It shouldn't apply to your bank if it's solvent. I just don't see deposits being given a haircut if your credit union is going to have the guarantees. You have an insurance fund, so particularly as long as your deposits are within the $250,000, I just think it's highly unlikely. That is what is prompting us to hold our mortgage and move our other accounts there. If it's very solvent and you're under the $250,000, you should be fine. If you haven't read the first quarter wrap-up on where to stash your cash, I recommend it to you. Hi, Catherine. I was wondering what you would think about tightening up the language in the conversation remind control and being more precise. A big factor in my decision to become a subscriber and such a raving fan is the fact that not only are you the only person who can make sense out of all the financial weirdness I saw going on, I couldn't figure it out. But you are the only person who talks about finance who also gets the entrainment thing and how it's being used. I noticed the commentary about commercials, the Chase commercial. I feel like referring to that as mind control might actually distract from the increasing ubiquitous mind control in the forms of entrainment, frequencies, and false flags. Whereas I do think it's good to get people talking about and observing these things. The effect of the Chase pig commercial is community college marketing 101. I couldn't agree more. That's absolutely right. They put out a commercial that invokes feelings you want. They want you to associate with them. It's what advertisers have been doing, literally predating written language. Yes, I agree. Do we really expect them to put out a commercial with bank managers dressed as voracious demonic vampires and their tellers looking like extras from The Walking Dead, munching on the brains of unsuspecting bank customers and turning them into zombies? Too, actually, I think they're marketing niches where that might appeal. Now, talking about the ways in which these companies are using neuroscience to design and tweak their ads, that's maybe more along those lines. I'm going to skip over a little bit here. Let's see. So I'm skipping over. Here's the thing. I think your comments, I agree with you. I was really being very imprecise. We have many different levels of using anything from the tactics of persuasion to mind control. So let me go through them. We have the tactics of persuasion, which includes advertising and neuroscience. We have bullying and coercive force of various kinds. Then we have entrainment and subliminal programming. Then really, being precise, to me, mind control would be criminal hypnosis or MK Ultra or implants that interact with electromagnetic weapons. Then, of course, there's a maybe there's a category for pollution, EMF pollution. We really do need a taxonomy and a precise catalog of technologies and options for dealing with it. And I've thought off and on about doing that. I've posted several reviews, including one series of books by Mark Rich, one called Technologies of Control, that have tried to do that. But I really think we've reached the point where we need someone like a Richard Dolan or Joseph Farrell to go do a major book on the topic and give us a very precise sort of catalog and taxonomy of the technologies. Anyway, the challenge is the information is pretty murky, so it's a tough job to do. Then a subscriber writes, an email message just came from Amazon Prime, how it is starting to deliver groceries and office supplies free of charge within 2 hours. Oh boy. I'm considering getting rid of my car and no longer driving anywhere, but I would like fresh food delivered from farmers markets and the local Wegmans. There's no doubt that the Amazon and drone revolutions are on. And they've just started, and it's going to be a retail wrecking ball. It's going to create havoc with many, many of the shopping malls and sort of the whole retail establishment. Because if home delivery can and home delivery often at low cost can save people time, they're given the pressure on their time. They're gonna do it. Dear Catherine, did this for you and John about 2 or 3 months ago. Didn't finish it, but hey, you get the picture. It's the Chain Breakers, and it's a picture of me and John on a. I'm driving a motorcycle. John's in the passenger car. Felt very inspired. Wish I'd done your jumpsuit red now, but never mind. I would love to be able to publish this on the blog, so I wanted to see if I could get your permission to do so. And if I do you want attribution anonymously or by name? So definitely let me know. It's a great picture. Another question about the Treasury succession, which I already answered. Again, I don't think there's anything there other than times are volatile, and I think they're being careful. Could you get a resignation of a fair number of people, given how messy things are at Treasury? Yes, it's definitely possible. I go back to coast days with you, and I greatly respect you and your work. I have a home equity line of credit with my local regional bank. This involves a lien against my house. Of course, I'm not using it and do not need it except for a rainy day. Would you be nervous about a lien on your house if just in this manner? Thanks for all your work. Generally, no. I could see why you'd want to have a home equity line of credit. The one thing you need to be concerned about is if your bank would play along with an identity theft game where somebody took the money down and they said it was your liability. So clearly, you only want to do this with a bank that has a very good governance structure and management. You want to make sure you're in touch and you know people there. So there's institutional relationships, so they can't say they didn't know it wasn't you. Hi, Catherine. This is proof that you can actually get a tiny bit of truth on cable news, especially on a Saturday when no one is watching. I just saw an interview on Fox News with astronaut Tom Jones about his new book, Ask the Astronaut, where he answers more than 340 questions. It's a book aimed at kids, teens. He was asked, what's your message to the youth? His reply, we need you. We're going to do great things in space over the next 10, 20, 30 years. I'm 51, but I feel like I should try to work in a space-related niche industry. Let's embrace this transition, whatever our age. There is no doubt that these different policies or technologies are taking us in certain directions, and you want to be aligned with where things are going. And I think I think space is going to be a major push now for the next, I can't even imagine, certainly the rest of our lives. So I think there's going to be tremendous opportunity if that's what's in your heart to do. But be careful. You know, there are a variety of different companies, some that I would be happy to be associated with, others I would stay away, far, far away. So, you know, as always in any industry, be careful who you play with. Hello, Catherine. You've been asked this so many times, I imagine you can almost give this answer in your sleep. I'm looking for the best bank in the United States. Do you have any recommendations? We have a page called Bank Intimate. If you just do a search for Solari.com and Bank Intimate, it goes through sort of how you find the bank that's best for you. The best bank I've found in America is my bank, National Bank of Malvern in Malvern, Pennsylvania. So I don't know if they're anywhere near where you are. They're certainly not near where I am, but they're run by my cousins, who I think are fantastic, just fantastic bankers and very, very competent, very, very capable. So that's my favorite bank in the country. Is it the best bank? I haven't due diligenced every bank in the country, so I can't say. We did two Solari reports with National Bank of Malvern. I also, if you haven't read the first quarter cash report, I strongly recommend you do that. So I'd read the Bank Intimate page. I'd read that Where to Stash Your Cash report from the first quarter and take a look at those two audio seminars with various leaders and executives from National Bank of Malvern. Another question, have you considered Ellen Brown as a guest? She's articulate and clear. Yes, I have considered her. She and I disagree strongly on, I'm very much for private banks and credit unions, where she's promoting government banks. And I'm very opposed to anything that would allow government to get more power and control over local credit. Although I think a state banks, particularly that support and encourage local private banks are a great idea. But yes, Ellen is on the list, and we just have to get over that big issue. Hi, Catherine. I reread the bank budget, the Black Budget article, September 3rd, 2003. Also just got done reading Summertime Back to School. Read a subscriber's comment in the Solari report that said something to the effect of, quote, if you hear the same story, observations, or experience from enough people, then eventually you know it is reality. I posted snippets of things I've seen or experienced over the internet that I believe relate to the Black Budget, but I've never elaborated on the point I have in what I've written below. And then they send a long story, which I'm not going to include for security reasons because I don't want to compromise the person who wrote it. I do want to mention that Steve Greer, at the end of November, he's the head of the Disclosure Project, did an almost 4-hour video that really tells the whole history of the Black Budget and the national security state. And it's a pretty good summary view. And I put it up on the website. It's in Geopolitics, I think, last week or the week before. It's about 3 hours and 50 minutes long, but you can break it down into different watchings, which is what I did. But it will really give you a good overview if you're not knowledgeable about that topic. Somebody sent a horrible article, Miami Beach Now, a Zika zone. Real estate tourism could be stung, and the subscriber says, well, just when you thought it couldn't get any more bizarre, a Zika zone. So if you're one block over, you're perfectly fine. Disaster capitalism, but also affecting tourism. I'm missing Ebola. And remember, now you've got the hurricane coming. Hi, Catherine. I was struck by your mentioning of altering the Constitution and Bill of Rights because that would truly take away the like power bestowed upon us to govern ourselves. I'm really interested how the feds are moving into state and local government on all levels through House Resolution 4401. There is a sleight of hand happening with language and law that moves power over to unconstitutional agencies like Homeland Security, Fusion Centers, FEMA, IRS. Chris Ann Hall is an expert on the Constitution, was a federal prosecutor for 10 years. She truly is a wealth of information, and it's incredible to have her teach the 800 constitutional history of the United States Constitution. Listening to her is enlightening and citing on and on and on. I have ordered her books. I'm not sure when I will be able to get to them if you look at my schedule and what I've promised to read for the last of the year, but I have her books sitting in the den. Hi, Catherine. You may have already discussed, but I would love to hear more in your upcoming money and market comments about the ever-growing chasm between investing in the crony economy and in a truly more productive world. Especially as boomers try to hand off money to our grown kids, it seems almost like damned if you do, damned if you don't conundrum. That is, we almost have to begin the process by parking the funds in mainstream index products, know the life cycle of the underlying investments, maybe uncomfortably short as the crony economy reaches its denouement, and they use the prison companies as an example. But if we choose to do otherwise, we are effectively calling the end of the world's greatest Ponzi scheme. I have not found a financial advisor who grasps that issue, much less is willing to make that call on clients' behalf. You have to go company by company, stock by stock, piece of real estate by piece of real estate, private equity deal by private equity deal. It's very granular. By the way, totally understandable as far as I'm concerned. I'm going through another iteration in this process now, and I'm coming to some highly non-intuitive conclusions, but I would love to hear any input you have on how best to frame the issues and structure the decision process. Thanks. What you're talking about is a very big topic because it crosses all the different categories of investment, both securities and real estate, commodities. It's very broad. And when you address those issues, you have to address them in the context of each person's unique situation. I have a lot of historical, both audio seminars and Solari reports on sort of financial process and planning process. One thing that will be of interest to you, first of all, if you haven't read the first quarter cash stash piece, I strongly recommend you do. But I'm just about to record something on place-based economics, which I think might be very helpful to what you're talking about. If you want to give me some more specifics, I'll see if I can't address some of it on the Solari report. But again, it's very hard to generalize, and I don't like to do it because it can be very misleading to people. Next question. I think the whole full court press to protect Hillary Clinton's emails has little to do with Hillary. I think it has to do with keeping Bill Clinton, from being indicted for conspiracy to sell access to Hillary's State Department. But first, goes through Manafort's resignation and then comes back and basically says this is designed to protect Bill. I don't think so. Here's my guess. I think that if you look at the amount of money that the Clintons were raising, that what they kept for themselves and their team was a relatively small portion, and a great deal of money has been laundered through the foundation basically for quote-unquote syndicate purposes. And so you're not protecting just Bill, you're protecting a much wider group of the establishment and a whole lot of shenanigans in places like particularly the disaster capitalist hits like Indonesia and Haiti. I also suspect that if you were going to prosecute the Clintons, the place where they're in the most trouble is what Charles Ortel says, which is charity fraud. In other words, if you look at their legal authorizations and the nature of their compliance, they're really probably seriously out of compliance. He's probably right. And so it's a much harder prosecution to prosecute people on pay to play. I'm sure you could do it, but I think the charity fraud is probably pretty clear. The reality is on either one, the people who need to be protected are not the Clintons, it's the syndicate, and the enormous amount of what is probably a charity fraud. Okay, next question. Thank you for the opportunity to contact you with a question. Before doing so, I want to say to Catherine that your work is incredibly helpful. You're quite amazing. Well, thank you very much. My question is whether I might get advice as to what to do with cash I'm holding in Alaskan Credit Union. I've invested in silver and gold coin, have some cash in hand, held no equities, and have no debt. I'm recently divorced from a 21-year marriage and receive a monthly amount for a 5-year period along with additional larger payments to be made over time totaling dollars X. Thank you for any suggestions you have. Again, if you haven't read I can't give investment strategy, let alone for an individual, because I don't know enough about your particular situation. If you haven't read The Stash Your Cash First Quarter, I would strongly recommend you do that, because the first thing you need to do is to make sure the cash is squared away. The second thing you need to do is make sure I would certainly extinguish all debt, and then you go from there in your financial plan. I should say I am an investor in securities, both fixed income and equities. I lean towards equities. I think one of the risks that we run, of course, is very significant swings in the equity markets, which is why so much of the equities I do are what's called hedged equities. So you're protected from a major correction on the downside. One of my concerns about the markets is if we get a crash up in the equity markets, I think it is not a good idea to be left out. And I think that's the attraction of hedged equity. Now, some people don't do securities, particularly if you can do income producing real estate. I think that can be an alternative. It really depends on where you are and what your skills and opportunities are. So as I said, you really need to have a lot more information on the individual. And again, that gets us into the realm of investment strategy, which I can't do here. Catherine, in line with this week's topics, you might find Stephen Ritz and his urban farming work in schools to be of interest. Yes, very much so. I have posted videos of Stephen Ritz before, and I again posted the one you sent in. I think it's great stuff. And, there are lots of great people doing urban farming. So I was glad we could have Will Allen interviewed by Harry Blazer. But I think, there are many other people doing great stuff. Catherine, thank you for the suggestion to watch Sputnik Fever, a very interesting and new to me perspective on the part played by President Eisenhower. I well remember the fears of the day and hiding under desks at school for practice air raid drills. The subject line above is the title of an article in the September-October 2016 issue of Popular Science. Authors Dillo, Lynn Singer. I'm unable to find it online to forward to you. It makes the point of China's determination to achieve dominance in space, launch space stations that would be in orbit after the current one is shuttered by 2024, have spy-proof satellites and secure financial and communication networks, and conduct a journey to the dark side of the moon. Yes, that is the case. They just launched a quantum computing satellite said to be non-hackable. They're planning on sending up many, many more next year. I know that. And so the question continues. I found myself wondering the status of our U.S. space program with missing trillions of dollars over decades of research and development. Are we playing poker with a guaranteed winning hand, expertly bluffed? That's a very important question. I agree with you. Where is that money going and what's really up in space? P.S. While riding the school bus on a crisp fall morning, 1957 or 58, I passed the fairway of number 2 at the XXX Country Club. We saw Arnie and an older white-haired gentleman. Everyone knew Arnie on sight, but it took us a minute or two to identify the other gentleman. President Eisenhower, just the two of them, 7:30-ish in the morning, no one else in sight. Times have changed, not for the better. The popsicle index at our town, in our town at that time was easily 100%. Apparently so, too, for famous golfers and presidents. Can you imagine the president out playing golf at 7:30 in the morning with no Secret Service? It's a very different day. So if we humans on the planet are to become part of the Federation of Planets, might this not require a Mr. Global, one world order government type, clearly one trade agreement after another, such as TTP and TIAS? TISA are designed and engineered into existence without concern for sovereign nations. How do the exciting new thresholds are we about to cross, exciting new thresholds we are about to cross relate to the higher spiritual planes of humans? Truly, this is the age of Aquarius, the fifth dimension saying about when we were younger. Provoking thought for a little fun. I can understand why some of this would require centralization, but if you look at what's going on with the technology, do we want to be centralized as slaves or do we want to be centralized as free people? So my concern with the current model is not that it's just centralization, but we're really watching something that is quite inhuman. And so I don't want to put a pretty face on it. So I don't disagree that there's a need for global coordination if we're going to, and a need to evolve a global culture. As I've said many times, the U.S. for decades, if not centuries, has been a big believer in individual and human rights, but we financed it by running around the world and destroying everybody else's rights. So if we're going to be a global culture, then, you know, we're going to have to play do unto others as you would have them do unto you globally. So that's working out a new global covenant. So I think there has to be a reinvention of something globally, but a lot of that has to do with the fact that we want to become a multiplanetary civilization. But I think this issue of freedom versus slavery is very serious, very important. It's coming to a head, and I would encourage you to read the piece I wrote on productivity because that very much addresses it. Hi, Catherine. In case it's of interest, here's a link to the Zero Hedge article about Domino's Pizza delivering by drone, which includes a YouTube. And then this person also said, on another note, will you be doing a lunch in Reno or Davis? No, not on this trip, but I will definitely keep it in mind to do Reno on the next trip because it would be great to do one in that area. Thank you for the inspiration. Hi, Catherine. I was curious if in your travels, have you ever come across information pertaining to registration of live birth numbers and who is trading on the mutual funds for the birth certificate or bond on Social Security cards. Years ago, when the whole sovereign citizen popularity was high, I talked to a fellow who mentioned if I had a copy of my registration of live birth that the series of numbers on the bottom of the document could be found as being traded on the stock market. I only have a very bad copy of my birth certificate. This is an area I've always avoided. I believe that there's probably some truth to it, but it's impossible to get good information. There is a ton of information, misinformation, and garbage, and people with strange attitudes, to be blunt. And so I do think, though, and this is, again, something I addressed in the productivity piece, I think there's a real danger that we're using digital technology to perfect collateral, including human collateral, and so that this kind of system could overtly be implemented. And, you know, and I happen to believe that is happening. If you look at sort of the digitization of everything, that's being used to literally track productivity by on a per person basis. That's productivity to the syndicate and control. And we're literally seeing, a situation where people who are deemed to be worth more dead than alive are suddenly seeing their life expectancy shrink. I note there's a news story in the Washington Post about older white women dying from pharmaceutical poisoning. I sent it into the blog, so it should be up by Friday. And I would note that a life expectancy of a white woman with no high school education in my age cohort is down by 5 years since 1990. So I'm very concerned about these kinds of systems. And again, I would encourage you to read the piece I will publish next week on productivity. Dear Catherine, as a faculty member at our local med school university, I wanted to ask you about the safety and reliability of TIA CREF as retirement accounts. I've enjoyed very much listening to a few blogs, and your hearty laugh and a sense of humor of the absurd are very much welcome against the dark topics you discuss with your wonderful guests. Your chat with Daryl Hamamoto kept me up in the wee hours of the morning. I couldn't stop listening just to sleep. Thank you for this website and your courage and sincerity in putting out this information for your listeners and subscribers. Keep safe and well, and God bless. I haven't due diligence TIA CREF recently, but in my experience, they're always been very well governed, very well managed, extremely conservative. If you look at their structure, most of the risk they're managing is a risk to the beneficiary, the institution, not to TIA CREF. Their challenge, like everybody else, whether it's the beneficiary's challenge, the institution, or TIA CREF, is that with what's happening with interest rates, much of the money that they're managing, they're going to be struggling to get the kind of yields they need and would like to produce for the beneficiaries. But I would not, if I was going to worry about custodians, they would not be the first I would worry about, and I think they're pretty prudently managed. Dear Catherine, assuming that the article about Iceland regarding forgives the entire population their debts true, how do you feel about the idea? Will it be beneficial? I feel just great about the idea. I would much rather forgive the population's debt than the banks. And if you're going to forgive the bank's debt, you might as well forgive the population their debt. I don't think the story that you sent me about Iceland is true. And, I would be careful about this. If you want suggestions on what Congress can do to bring about real change, then I would encourage you to go see my letter to my Congressman, Marsha Blackburn. It's up on the website. You can pick it up by just doing a search for her name, Marsha Blackburn, or you can also... you'll also be able to find a copy in the piece that we publish next week on productivity. I duplicated it in the discussion. And they continue, thanks for sharing your expertise with us. I appreciate your special reports and guests. It's my pleasure. Hi, Catherine. Quick update on my efforts to switch to a local bank. I made the list, looked at the websites, made phone calls, looked at financial statements. Can your next segment please be how to open a local bank? You don't want to open a local bank. There are plenty of good local banks with capacity. But of course, we do have our bank intimate page, and I'm assuming you had read that before you did this. Banks that don't have their financial statements published on the SEC site, most of them do have published financial statements. It's just on a different website. That's the call, the FDIC. Call reports. I was instructed to search for the call report, and for banks that have more than one branch, it will be listed in the city they're designated as their main location. I think most of this information, if you haven't looked at the Solari Bank Intimate page, it's most of it's up there. But they didn't want me. Oh no, this is very strange. They wouldn't take me as a customer because I don't have a permanent local address. They said that even within their other branches, their policy is customers must live no further than approximately 60 miles from the branch they're applying at. Well, that's interesting. I live more than 1,000 miles away from my bank. I got a recommendation from a neighbor, and after looking at their finances, I will be trying my luck with another bank closer. Good work. So make sure if you haven't read the first quarter, where to stash your cash. I think that would help. And of course, we did 2 Solari reports on the details of moving to a local bank. And then, of course, we have the bank intimate page. You can pick it up on a search. Dear Catherine, I would love for you to ask the following question of Franklin Sanders when you interview him. Do you see a time when gold will finally break free of the continued downward manipulation of its price? or do you believe the price will always be held down substantially below what it would really become in a free market? I have absolutely no idea. I think the price of gold is managed. It's part of the governance structure. So I don't foresee any time when the price of gold will not be managed. Now, whether that means it's up or down, who knows? But I will tell you exactly what Franklin would say. He would say that fundamentals matter. And so, yes, it's managed, but the fundamental economics always matter to the people managing it and to the people who would have it be a market. Dear Catherine, in your opinion, what must we do as American citizens to take control of our government back? I hate to be repetitive. See the productivity theme PDF that we publish next week. I'll be addressing that topic there. And I'm also recording a Solari report in September called On Place-Based Development, How to Rebuild a Local Economy. And I really encourage you to listen to that because we have 3,100 counties. We're going to have to take them back one at a time. And key to taking them back is to rebuilding the local economies. Hi, Catherine. I'm looking for a bank or banks that would be strong enough to survive a global derivatives meltdown. Do you know of any services I can use to assess these, or do you have any banks that you recommend? Here it is again, the Bank Intimate page at Solari. Just do a Solari search for Bank Intimate plus Solari.com, or do a search on the website for the Bank Intimate page. One of the things we suggest is using the bank rating services. You can pick them up on searches. And again, please read that first quarter, Where to Stash Your Cash on Cash Management will help. Okay, let's go to the movies. Our movie this week is a movie I've wanted to have for a long time, but it just started to be available by stream. It's called Vaxxed, and it is the story of the whistleblower from the CDC who confessed that they were destroying and manipulating data that informed the connection between autism and heavy schedules of vaccination. It has a lot of information from Andrew Wakefield, who was a British doctor who tried to warn people about the MMR vaccines, which is the topic of the whistleblower from the CDC, Dr. William Thompson. And it is quite interesting. It's quite controversial. Vax has gotten a lot of attention since it was censored at the Tribeca Film Festival. And then on many interviews on the television, Robert De Niro, who runs the Tribeca Film Festival, one of the founders, who has a son who's autistic, said everybody should see it. Apparently he's now started to work on a documentary about autism and vaccination policy. This is an incredibly impactful documentary. You can stream it on Vidio for, I think it's $3.95, a relatively modest fee. When you watch it, it raises the question, why have we not determined what is causing autism and stopping it? There is one researcher in Vax who estimates at the current growth rate of autism in this country by 2032, half of the children will be on the autism spectrum and 80% of the boys will be on the autism spectrum. Now, this takes me back to where I started this money in markets, which is how can you have economic growth? How can you have productivity if you are absolutely destroying productivity? When you talk about that growth, the current growth in autism, what you're talking about is overwhelming the educational system, overwhelming the healthcare system, and literally destroying the productivity of the population. In fact, it's a slow-moving depopulation or genocide, but we're really talking about very Nazi-esque kinds of situations. One of the mothers in a Q&A after Vaxxed, as they go around the country doing the screenings, a lot of the people who are in the documentary and interviewed in the documentary do Q&As after the screenings. One of the mothers in one of the related Q&As said that the cost of having a severely autistic child, present value, was $5 million. Now, that destroys the financial net worth and economics of most families. So remember, these are severely autistic children or children who are going to need to be have some kind of institutional support for a lifetime. So this is a very serious productivity question, and the response of the establishment is to become more and more aggressive in insisting in heavy schedules of vaccines. And so we really have a debate which is at the heart of whether or not we're going to be slaves or free. Of course, we know California has just mandated vaccines for high school kids, so it's definitely coming to a head out in California. If the mandates stick in California, expect to see them move throughout the country. So this is something of that is deeply disturbing to many parents, many grandparents, many families. And I would just encourage you to watch this documentary and encourage others to do the same. We need to have a very informed debate about what is causing the explosive growth in autism and what we do about it and how we reverse it. And then the interview. It's always good to have Franklin Sanders back. We had a great discussion both about the precious metals market and what's going to be happening next year and how things are coming to a head. Of course, the big question is, has the bull reasserted? Franklin says yes. Rambis says yes. And it certainly looks like that. I've been very concerned that gold and silver could take another leg down. I still think that can happen, but the odds are less. I agree with Franklin that we're probably just in a correction. And I think the question is, when that correction bottoms out, is it going to be a buying opportunity? And that's one of the things I'm watching very closely. But it's a very fun and enjoyable interview with Franklin, and it's always good to have him back. Okay, so that's it. Next week, great interview with Charles Hugh Smith about the real rate of inflation. Very important for you to understand. Very good insights. Charles has two really great articles that were the inspiration for getting him on. One is called The Burrito, The Real Burrito Index, or The Burrito Index, where he tracks the cost of buying a burrito at the local burrito truck over many years and really underscores the real rate of inflation, particularly for food. Then he's got another article called The Real Rate of Inflation, which he estimates at 7%, which I think is much closer than the official statistics of about 1%. Then on September 15th, a new guest, a remarkable guest, Sophia Smallstorm, All the World is a Stage. Sophia is the master at sort of explaining how the nuts and bolts in the Matrix are kind of rigged. She started off looking very deeply at chemtrails, knows a lot about global spraying programs. And then September 22nd, as I said, I'm going to do something on place-based development. It's rebuilding a local economy with Harry Blaser. We're going to go in deep, talk about the real risks. So until September 8th with Charles Hugh Smith, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.